Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how we doing?
Ian Safar is here. Hello, Ian.
Hello, what up?
We got Teron Davenport 30 minutes early for the TD Power Hour, 2:30 to 3:30. So we will have TD in 30 minutes. Full breakdown of what he saw at minicamp, plus, you know, some of these off-season thoughts, getting ready for camp. We'll have that. But I want to start with this. How about that baseball game last night? Do you give up?
No. I saw it through. I was with someone who put money on Stanford, and they were just so excited about it. They were so ready to cash in, and then nope.
Ian, did you give up last night?
I'll be honest. Last night was like crazy hashtag good sports, right?
Yes.
It was all over the place. And honestly, I was all over the place. Nashville SC. College World Series, hockey, basketball, just awesome stuff. So, yes, I saw it.
So, I had the four TVs going last night.
Flex.
And, well, you know, I had the four TVs going last night watching all the games. And it was funny because I had where it went big and then the three little on the side because you can screw around with it. And I had Vandy on the big one and then I had the other ones on there. First of all, to Ian's point, it was a great night. How about them Atlanta Hawks, FYI?
That was a good game. How about them Islanders?
The Islanders in overtime, Barry Trotz, great night. But I'm watching the Vandy game, and I'm watching error after error. Bat at bat, you know, one pitch fly out to left field. Strike three, look. I mean, I'm watching Vandy, I'm like, you know when you see Alabama play football, and you see a bunch of mistakes, and every time a guy moves off, you know, offsides or illegal formation or hands to the face or holding, the TV camera pans right over to Saban, and they show Saban on the sidelines, and he's got his arms crossed in this just, oh boy, you don't want to have to come off the field to Nick Saban. And then if you do, Saban might grab the face mask because that's not how Nick Saban coaches football. There are certain teams. If the Kansas City Chiefs do something stupid, well, that's just, you know, Kansas City does that kind of stuff. The Alabama does something stupid, it's like, oh, how dare a Nick Saban team do that? How dare? We don't feel that way about Clemson. Clemson does something stupid. We don't look at Dabo and think, how dare a Dabo team play like that?
Florida does something stupid. You don't think twice about it.
No, you do not. Both on the field and off the field.
Yes,
Florida.
Correct.
But I'm watching the game last night. And I'm seeing these errors and these bad at bats. And I'm like, this is not Tim Corbin baseball. I tweeted that out. I said, this is not Tim Corbin ball. Like, and I've been watching Tim Corbin long enough to know that when I see a double play that doesn't get turned, or I see a fly ball that doesn't get caught, or I see guys not battling at the plate, I'm like, no, no, no. This is not going to sit well with Tim. Because it's one thing to lose. You know, Tim Corbin will be the first person to throw his hand up in the air if they feel like they've gotten beaten. Tim will throw his hand up in the air and either take the blame himself or congratulate the other team and say, hey, that's a great team. When they lost to NC State, he said, look, it was a great pitched game. They pitched better. But I'm seeing these errors made, and I'm seeing this kind of bad. And I say, this is not Tim Corbin baseball. And then in between innings down 4-0, Tim Corbin brings the team together. And he just lays into him. Next guy walks, next guy homers 4-2. And I thought, oh my God, there's something about those kind of coaches, the Sabins, the Belichicks, those guys that when they call timeout and they bring the team over and they lay into the team and there's that automatic response. You don't get that from Dan Quinn and the Falcons. You don't get that at Dallas. But there is something with these great coaches. When you call timeout, it's like, oh, Tim Corbin's going to give it to you. And Corbin gave it to him, and automatically Vanderbilt's back in the game. And Vanderbilt did not play their best game last night, but they battled. And I remember thinking down a run when Javier Yaz was up. And I remember Kevin Ingram on our show on Monday talking about, you know, we were talking a lot about Enrique Bradfield's speed. And he was talking about, hey, Javier Yaz is maybe just as fast as Bradfield. And I'm thinking, down by a run, two outs in the ninth. If Yaz can just get on, if Kevin Ingram's right about his speed, that it's as good as Bradfield's, you know, maybe they can make something happen. And they needed some help, and Stanford gave it to them last night. But I watched Vanderbilt come all the way back. Christian Little probably gave it his best effort. They went to the aces in the pen. They went to Maldonado. They went to Murphy. They went to McIlvain. I mean, clearly they were setting up for just get it to Friday and bring in Rocker and see what you can. Like, that's the whole goal for Friday. And I'm thinking if they can just get on base, maybe they can. And immediately Vanderbilt has action. And when Vanderbilt with a two-out rally, when they scored to tie the game, and Bradfield, the guy who got picked off to start the game, when Bradfield pumped his fist, I thought, that Tim Corbin did it again. He did it again. It wasn't a substitution. It wasn't, you know, the right call to hit and run, to bunt, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's just something about Tim Corbin. Last night's game was one of those games where Tim Corbin willed that team to victory. That was classic Corbin. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that Vanderbilt's going to win the whole thing. I certainly feel a lot better about it now than I did 5 hours or five, than I did 25 hours ago or whatever it was. I feel much better about it now because now you got Kumar Rocker lined up to go on Friday night. But it's like there's nothing Tim Corbin can do more that can impress me. And then last night happens. And I'm a big cause and effect guy. Like Joe Rexroom gets all bent out of shape when somebody exits the Predators lineup. They start playing better. And then I'm like, see? Like maybe Ryan Ellis isn't that important to everybody. And it's like, no, you don't understand. I'm a big cause and effect guy. Titans were 8-8. 8-8, 8-8. They drafted Javon Kearse there in the Super Bowl. I'm a cause and effect guy. That speech Corbin gave them, and I believe Chris Budden, the sideline reporter, said, she basically said, get your heads out of your rear end or you're on a bus back home. And a lot of coaches have called their teams over, and a lot of coaches have reamed their teams out, and a lot of coaches, but it's something about Tim Corbin. And again, the players played their hearts out last night. Even if they had lost, I would have said that they played their hearts out. They didn't play Vanderbilt baseball, committing all those errors. That's not Vandy ball. That's not Tim Corbin baseball. But I look at last night's game, and I literally just point the finger at Tim Corbin, and I say, you won them that game last night. You won that team that game. And if you're going to win in Omaha, unless everything just goes perfectly, you're going to need random people at random times to pull you through. Last night, Vanderbilt got that from Bradfield with the RBI single. I thought they got excellent work out of the bullpen from Maldonado, from Murphy, from McIlvain. I thought, even though they kept letting runners on, somehow they kept getting out of their jams. I thought Dominic Keegan, who we've been kind of hard on through the first two games in the College World Series, hits the home run to make it 4-2 to give Vanderbilt life. But if I'm giving out the game ball for yesterday, it goes to number four, Tim Corbin, because that was so, again, when I think of great coaches, when I think of Phil Jackson, or I think of Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, I mean, the guys who are just truly great coaches, that's what they do. That's what they do. There are a lot of good coaches that always call their team over and don't have that result. So I look at last night, Caroline, and I would say, put this one in the column of Tim Corbin. I don't know how he did it, but that is why he is paid the most money in college baseball, because some way, somehow, whatever he said to those guys in the dugout, they are alive to play another day.
See, I have just found it remarkable that Vanderbilt in Omaha, game one, felt like an unwinnable game that they won. Game two against NC State felt like an unlosable game, the way the Jack Leiter was pitching, and they lost. And last night felt like, in the final inning, it felt like an unwinnable game, and they won it. So Vanderbilt has beaten the odds every single game they have played so far in Omaha. And you say you're giving credit to Tim Corbin. I'm not taking credit away from Tim Corbin, because the way that he was able to lead his team and to kind of keep his team's head where it needed to be, I say it was less Tim Corbin and more of a major Stanford mess up.
So you thought Stanford just absolutely crapped their pants?
Yes. Like, we have said so many times this week, did Vanderbilt blow it? Did Tennessee choke? Did they blow it?
Sure.
I don't think they did. I think they just didn't play up to the level that they were supposed to. Stanford blew it. They blew it. They were one out away several times from locking in their place to be in the Final Four, and they didn't. And that pitcher, Beck, their closing pitcher last night, was playing absolutely lights out, had one of the nastiest curveballs I have seen in college baseball.
He was the Pac-12 pitcher of the year, right? Like, they made a big deal. So I want to did he start Saturday? I mean, I didn't watch, so I wouldn't know. You know, Stanford, NC State, I'm not going to watch that. But I think he did, because he threw like 110 pitches, and then he was coming back in relief here. So he's their best pitcher. And to your point, I mean, you got the winning run at third, and you throw it over the catcher's head.
Blew it.
What are you going to do there?
Right. And several times he was one strike away from just ending it all, and then they're done. Vanderbilt's out, and they can move on, and they'll focus on Friday. And they couldn't do it.
So do you think that the 28-3 Super Bowl was the greatness of Brady and Belichick, or do you think that it was the Falcons choking?
I think it was more so the Falcons choking, and I'm not going to take that victory away from Brady and Belichick, but the Falcons had that game won, and they just blew it.
See, I guess I'm a little torn.
Just because you just love Brady.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, I'm with you, like, Stanford did. I mean, errors in the ninth inning.
And things happen, mistakes happen, but Stanford had that game won. Vanderbilt won that
wild
game.
Wild pitch. Bottom of the order comes through for Vanderbilt. You know, they 8-9-1 hitters. It wasn't like it was Dominic Keegan and Carter Young.
It's not their three
got
and
it
four
all
holes.
Started. So you bring up a fair point. I'm sticking with Corbin, though. I think Vanderbilt was just peeing their pants last night. They could not handle that spotlight. Errors, mistakes, getting picked off of first base, bad at bats. Tim Corbin rallies the troops. Vanderbilt finds a way. That's Tim Corbin ball. So they went from playing the most un-Tim Corbin-like game.
It was a gross baseball game.
Oh, the most un-Tim Corbin-like game to going towards what I, again, call a Corbin-like game. Caroline says Stanford choked. What do we think? 615-737-1025. Ian, what do you think? Did Stanford choke?
Well,
or is Tim Corbin just great?
Well, I mean, Stanford's pitchers seemed to be kind of running out of gas there at the end. And it was a wild pitch, like an extremely bad wild pitch. And that whole inning, honestly, they kind of gaffed it away. I don't know about the whole game, but that inning, definitely, I almost would put more on Stanford than Vandy.
Let's get your reaction to it. 615-737-1025. TD here in about 15 minutes for the TD Power Hour. 615-737-1025. And we were kind of Debbie Downers on Vanderbilt's chances. We were yesterday. Did the win kind of change our mind? We'll discuss. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 1025 The Game.
Oh, he sailed it over his head! The Cardinals are going to lose on a wild pitch from Beck. Spencer Jones scores. Vanderbilt alive. They win it 6-5. What happened? Oh, heartbreak for Brendan Beck and Stanford. And the Commodores get two in the bottom of the ninth to win. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
It was just a moment. You know, I don't typically talk to him during the course of the game, but I just thought that there was some moments. I went out to the mound to change pitchers, and I didn't think the eyes looked good. And Brown, when I came back in, Brownie said the same thing. So I just didn't want to go down. If we're going to lose, we're going to lose playing aggressively. And I just didn't think we were. It was just more of a challenge than anything else. Rare moment, because first of all, I don't like doing that. And second of all, it's their game. It's theirs to win or lose, and you don't ever want to interfere. But at the same time, I didn't feel like they were playing like themselves, and we needed to snap out of it. And I'm not saying that discussion had anything to do with what happened, but at that point, we just needed to snap out of whatever fog we were in, because that we were not playing like ourselves.
I don't want to say that it had anything to do with the game, but yes, it did, Coach Corbin. This is the thing about Tim Corbin. Tim Corbin does not want to take the credit for the fact that, like I said, I think he willed Vanderbilt to victory yesterday. When he says, like, I don't like doing that. I don't like bringing everybody in the dugout and having that kind of discussion. I think that that kind of, you know, the Tim Corbin ripping everybody's rear end, I think that is, in case of emergency, break the glass. Because he doesn't do that. You know, some coaches will do that every game. They see something they don't like. Everybody here, you know, like if I
but
was
But then
coach,
you get desensitized to it.
Right. Which is why you save that for a very important moment. And when you are just letting it all hang loose in Omaha and you're about to be on a bus going back home, that's the time to do it. And he did it. And they won. Now, Caroline does bring up the fact that Stanford was, if not the real pants crapper of the night, certainly an accessory to that.
Yes.
And I'm a little torn. Because I still think in the greatness of Tim Corbin, this idea that Tim Corbin is putting out there that had nothing to do with it, Tim, come on now. That being said, do you think Vanderbilt's still alive? Like, you think they still now that it's not three games to win, it's two games to win, and they're going to have a rocker, you would assume, going tomorrow, which I'm okay with. You know, they throw lighter on Saturday or Sunday, and I forget which day they would play that game. I think they'd play it Sunday. If they throw rocker on Sunday, lighter on Sunday, I'm a little bit more nervous because of the amount of pitches he threw and the time in between games and whatever. But do you think Vanderbilt still has a chance, or are we still skeptical that they'll be able to beat NC State twice?
I definitely think they still have a chance because I said yesterday that I didn't feel good about Vanderbilt's chances. I would have felt way better about it if they could just focus on Friday. But now they're past Wednesday. They won Wednesday, which I honestly did not think they would be able to do without Rocker and Leiter. I worry about not having as much rest as they would have if they could have just won on Monday and gone straight to Friday, but they're baseball players. They know they do this. They do doubleheaders all the time. So I think they absolutely are alive because they just needed to get past Wednesday, get a win on Wednesday, and then you can focus on Rocker and Leiter and get your aces in the games that really matter.
You think they'll go with Leiter again this week?
Yes,
I mean, he's not a big leaguer, so this is not the idea of 4 days in between starts. This is a kid who usually starts on Saturday, and then starts on Saturday.
Right. I mean, are you going to sit him and save him for a game later on and just hope that you win that game? See, I say you go ahead and throw him in there, get a win.
Well, I'm worried about protecting his arm. I'm worried about protecting his $7 million arm. That's how I would view that.
Do you think Corbin is more concerned about a $7 million arm rather than a win in the College World Series?
I think, and this is not a Corbin thing. Mm-hmm. This is a college baseball thing that I do not like. Like that kid Beck for Stanford that went in there, if he threw 100-plus pitches on Saturday, he has no business being
absolutely
in the game.
Absolutely not.
For as many pitches as he threw last night, he has no business being in that game on a Wednesday. You know, like that's just ridiculous. But that's college baseball. College baseball, if Jack Leiter goes on to have an unbelievably successful career with the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Boston Red Sox or the Detroit Tigers or whatever team drafts him, if he goes on to have success, or if he gets drafted by those guys and gets hurt, you know, that doesn't really matter for Tim Corbin. Now, I think the success that Corbin has had with his pros in general, I think, is a big deal. But, I mean, you know, you have a Tommy John, you take a year off, you come back, okay, here you go. And because you can't tie a direct link to that pitch, like you can't say that pitch that you decided to pitch Jack Leiter on, if you had pitched him on 118 on Tuesday night instead of 119 or 120, then he would be completely healthy, but he pitched that pitch. Because you can't do that, it's really hard to, like, argue against it other than the fact that it is, generally speaking, not healthy. So I personally would have reservations about pitching Jack Leiter if they were to win that first game against NC State. I just know Tim Corbin's history. He's pitched Sonny Gray on a Saturday and brought him back on a Monday. He started Mike Minor on a Friday and started him on a Monday. Like, I've seen that before. So, to answer your question, he'll definitely pitch Leiter. I'm just saying I wouldn't. And, I mean, again, I think we're putting this all a little ahead, you know, of every. I mean, they're going to need a great outing from Rocker.
NC State is a good team.
NC State's good. They can't have Rocker going six innings. Like, they need seven and two-thirds. Like, they need that from Rocker because they used Maldonado last night. They used Luke Murphy last night. They used Chris McElvain last night. So they can't just go to the well on those guys. But I think that we've just said with Vanderbilt, here's the tough part with Vanderbilt, is that the whole key for them was to get to that College World Series final and then be able to roll Rocker, Leiter out 1-2 and win it. If they get past NC State, they won't be able to run those guys out there like they want to. Maybe they'll be able to go Rocker on like Wednesday after pitching a Friday and then maybe Leiter on Thursday after, however. But, I mean, they're going to have like Christian Little, Patrick Riley, like those guys are going to have to win them some games now. I think it's going to be tough to do. Let's go to your phones. Let's get to a quick Vandy text in here or two. 615-737-1025 before we get to TD. Phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What we got?
One texter texted in and said Corbin's pep talk woke them up enough to put them in a position to take advantage of any mistake Stanford made, and Stanford obliged.
Corbin woke them up. Corbin won the game last night. Corbin won the game. Who should the game ball go to? Corbin. He won him the game last night. I'm convinced of it. Thank you, Texter.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to discredit anything that Tim Corbin did because he definitely did wake them up a little bit and say, hey, like this game is not over. Mm-hmm. But these are really good baseball players, and whether they have a pep talk or not, they're going to capitalize on any mistake that the other team makes.
Oh, no, they needed a pep talk. Like, they needed the pep. This, we talked about this.
College baseball never hurts.
College baseball is not pro baseball where it's like, okay, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. came up and launched a 3-run homer and we got back in the game.
Right.
Like, okay, it's a little different. TD will join us next. We'll get TD's thoughts. Now that the offseason is over, it's over for everybody. How likely are the Titans to contend? When I say they're contenders, what does TD think of that? We'll get to that coming up next. Speaking of comebacks, Nashville SC last night with a big one. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game this Saturday from 5 to 7 for the Nashville SC pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the match on Broadway and get some game swag, plus register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Then head over to Nissan Stadium for the 7:30 match. Get your tickets now for Nashville SC at NashvilleSC.com and tune into the match on ESPN 94.9. The TD Power Hour is next. It's Stillman and Company on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It is an earlier, 30 minutes earlier than normal time for the TD Power Hour presented by Freedom Tire Guys. Teron Davenport is here with us. TD, how are you?
I'm great, man. Every day is a blessing just to wake up. A blessing. Yo, let me tell you something. It's crazy we get paid to do this. You know what I mean?
Talking about sports?
Don't tell anybody, but I'll do it for free. But I'm just glad to be getting paid and just blessed to do this, man. I feel good, man. Today is an awesome day. Beautiful weather. Everything is just kosher.
TD is on one today, which I like. So I want to start with this question. Big question now that mini camp is over and there is nothing left until training camp, TD. Here's the question for you. If you had a checklist for Super Bowl contention, how many boxes, in your opinion, would the Titans check, and how many boxes would they leave unchecked?
I mean, I think they're close. They definitely – well, I'll say this. They're contenders for AFC conference championship. I would say that. How many boxes? I mean, offense I think is a check. Defense, not yet. Special teams, not yet. Coaching staff I think is a check. So I say 2 out of 4.
Mm-hmm. I look at it and think to myself, if Dupree is healthy and the guy that he was in Pittsburgh last year, and if Farley is healthy and the top corner in the draft, like everybody for the most part said he was pre-injury, then I think they're contenders. And it's weird because you're looking at two people and it's more than two people. The game is always bigger than two people. But for some reason, I think if you can tell me that those two guys will be healthy come training camp and that they will play this season and that they will make the impact that they were drafted or signed to do, then I think they are legitimate Super Bowl contenders. And I know that sounds crazy, but I just think that We know the offense is ready to go. The coaching, I'm kind of, you know, Bowen's got to earn some stripes. I love having Jim Schwartz there. But Todd Downing, I think I feel okay about. But again, I think it's those two guys. Is it wild to think that that may be the difference for this team?
No, it's not wild to think that's the difference. I understand you're going to have questions about Bowen. But I think just, again, going back to that synergy that they have, I think they're going to be fine. And the fact that they have players this year, cornerbacks this year, outside of Malcolm Butler, who are willing to challenge receivers, and they're taking it as a mission to challenge receivers and be aggressive with them, I think that is going to really help that defense a lot. And Bud Dupree, I don't know if you've seen his IG videos, but the man is getting it in, and I think that's a really good sign for them as well. So when you look at Bud Dupree and what he does for that pass rush, along with Danico Autry, in addition to better coverage on the outside that will give these guys up front more time, the Jeffrey Simmons, the Harold Landrys, those types. Jayon Brown's coming back, so that's going to help the pass rush. Hopefully, for the Titans' sake, they will allow Jayon Brown to be the pass rusher that he is. A lot of people don't know, but during the offseason, he works out with Clay Matthews. You know, so he's developing over time. He's developed those pass rush moves. Go back to 2018, the dude showed that he's very capable of rushing the passer. Give him a chance to do it this year. So I think all of those things will make that defense better.
TD, what would you say you felt more comfortable about with the Titans after watching OTAs and minicamp than you did going into those things?
Oh, well, that's pretty simple, and that's the receiver group. And obviously because of Julio Jones. Now, the thing is, I still think that they need that shifty little slot guy. And that's why I'm saying, man, Mason Kinsey, I had him on the show this week. That joker has an outside shot to make this roster. And don't be shocked if he does, because he also brings you help in the return game. So, I mean, for me, you know, the receiving core, I feel better about the receiving core just because of the addition of Jones, because now you could mix him, Josh Reynolds, or A.J. Brown in there at the slot, and then you could sprinkle in other guys, whoever that may be, whether it's Cam Batts and Mason Kinsey. I think after those top three, Kinsey is the best guy for them in the slot. Batson, to me, is a better outside receiver, to be frank with you.
It's funny because last week I put the receiver names in front of you and I made you cut guys. And I almost felt – and it was funny hearing the sympathy that you had for Rob Moore, the receivers coach, when you look at, you know – if Racy McMath and Des Fitzpatrick make the team, and those three guys we know are going to make the team, there's a spot for one more guy, Batson, Kinsey, Westbrook, Akina. I mean, I look at this team, TD, and I think there is not a team in the NFL, and this includes Tampa Bay, there is not a team in the NFL that can walk into training camp and think, okay, our team is for sure competitive enough right now to win the Super Bowl. Kansas City feels pretty good. Tampa Bay feels pretty good. Buffalo probably feels pretty good. But it will all develop throughout the course of the year. The key is, do you have the ingredients in order to do it? Am I nuts for thinking the Titans do? They're going to need a lot of things to go their way. But they have the ingredients that if things go their way, injuries go their way, knock on wood, that they could possibly have a team that is good enough to go compete with a Kansas City or
Absolutely.
A Tampa Bay.
Absolutely. There's no doubt in that. There is no doubt in that whatsoever. The pieces are in place. You needed help on the pass rush. They added that. You needed help in the secondary. Like, you needed to revamp and get more dogs in there. And they got that. Caleb Farley's a dog, man. Like, he's real calm off the field. Like, but you put him on the field, like, that dude's a dog. Elijah Molden is a dog. Jackrabbit Jenkins. They call him Rabbit, but he's a dog. So now that secondary just got better with the influx of those three guys, primarily Jenkins. And I just watch. You're going to see. And Titans fans are going to hate and love Jenkins, because Jackrabbit, he'll jump some routes. You know what I mean? And he might get beat on a double move. But if you check the internet, there are very few who have more pick sixes than him. You see what I'm saying? So right. It's a gift and a curse with him, but he's going to make plays too. So I think, you know, having that playmaking ability, being able to score the football as a defender, that does wonders for the team. So I think they'll be back. I think they do have all the pieces in place. And the big one, the addition of Julio Jones. Now, I feel personally, if it's time to go in a shootout, you know, the wild, wild west, right, with the Chiefs and all them, I think they could do it. I really do think they could do that. So, you know, when you have just the assortment of players, and, I mean, we talk about Anthony Firkser in the red zone. Like, the guy is swift with it, man. You could tell he played basketball because at the top of the routes, you see him hitting that crossover, and then he's getting open that way. He's hard to cover. So I think all of those things, and how could we not forget the John Deere tractor in the backfield, right? Derrick Henry, you know, when it's time to go shoot a shoe and run the football, he does it better than anybody in the league.
How would you compare Jenkins to Butler? Because, TD, you brought up Jenkins a lot after minicamp and OTAs. Corey Curtis brought him up a lot. Basically, everybody I talked to, Joe Retro brought him up. Every single person I talked to that went and covered practice was like, Jenkins. So, and I don't want to say that I don't appreciate Malcolm Butler, because I really do think Malcolm Butler was a good player for the 2+ years that he was here.
Man, listen, Butler was good. But let me just have you rewind, because it didn't take minicamp for me to talk about Jenkins. I was talking about him way before then. You know what I mean? When the Bulls signed with the Titans, I was talking about him. You see what I'm saying? Because he's a really good player. And if you want to compare the two, I'll tell you the difference between them. Jenkins scores the football. They both get interceptions, but Jenkins scores the football, man. That's really what it comes down to. He'll pick it off and take it to the house. And I think, you know, they both have that dog mindset, that pit bull approach to playing the game. They both are corners that could be asked to get into cat coverage and have no sweat doing it. I think that's something that makes them very similar. And they'll come up and they have no problem getting in the receiver's face and causing that chatter at the line of scrimmage, you know, jamming him and pressing him and rerouting him and making it hard for him to get into his routes. They're very similar players. I think the only difference, like I said, Janoris Jenkins or Jack Rabbit, he's going to score the football.
Are you nervous about the youth outside of Jenkins and Byard in the secondary?
No, I wouldn't be. Imani Hooker is an ascending player. And one of the things that I really like about Imani Hooker is his approach this year. He's like, yo, I am a starter now, but more importantly, I'm one of the veterans, so it's time for me to step up and be a leader on the team. I think that shows really good accountability. We already know what he could do on the field. So that one. And then behind him, you know, you got Dane Cruikshank rotating. Dane Cruikshank's a really good player. I'm not going to say really good, but he's a solid player. And when you go into dime situations, like, he could be that dime-type linebacker for you, you know, and that's something that he did a lot at Arizona when he was in college. So I think you had the youth there. I mean, I don't really think that there's much more I could say about Elijah Molden. It's very clear that, you know, he was one of my favorite prospects in this draft, and it's very clear that that's a guy that I put the TD stamp on him. The man could play football, right? And Caleb Farley is really all about not youth but recovery. If they could get him back to what he was, yeah, I don't think there should be any doubts. And I'm not going to forget Christian Fulton, who is quietly a guy that I could see them having in cat coverage as well, because that's something that, you know, he's capable of doing. He can play on the outside, play on the inside. He brings versatility. I think everything in that secondary is looking good. It's just a matter of them communicating, playing aggressively, challenging receivers.
You know, one of the things that Floyd used to always talk about is liking a guy as a fourth corner doesn't mean you're going to like him as a number one corner. So
Absolutely.
If guys get hurt and he's got to go in there to be a number one corner, you're not going to like him, but you would like him as a fourth corner kind of thing. And I think about a guy like Breon Borders and a guy Chris Jackson, who last year when they were put out there, they did some good things. They did some bad things. I mean, but to have those guys, you know, let's say that these picks hit Molden, Farley, Fulton, but to have the depth of a Jackson and a Borders, it's a lot better than having those guys start. And I kind of get excited thinking about the Titans secondary.
Yeah, I think you should. And Chris Jackson is an interesting player because I'll tell you who he reminds me of, and it's probably a guy that not many people have watched, but if you watch any of the 49, he reminds me of Jimmy Ward, you know, where he's a guy that could play nickel or safety. He was a safety at Marshall, in fact. So that's something to definitely note. And he is somebody. Remember last year when they touched ground in Denver, he was the nickel corner. So he does have some experience there. And Breon Borders held his own for the most part. There were a few mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. We're all imperfect. You're going to have those. But Borders held his own for the most part, and they brought him back. And I'll say this, in minicamp, he had a couple pretty nice reps covering Julio Jones. Now, again, helmet, T-shirt, and shorts. So take from it what you may, but I think Borders is ready to go too for them. I agree with you. The secondary is solid.
TD is with us for the TD Power Hour, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com. Coming up next, a current Hall of Famer, former great player, had an interesting opinion on the Titans' offense. We'll get TD's thoughts on that coming up next. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming the game Nashville app.
Yeah, Mike, yesterday Todd said that he didn't want to see a Todd Downing offense. He wanted to see a Tennessee Titans offense. What is the identity with this group that you have now that you want the offense to go into camp and build towards?
I mean, I think that's, you know, your identity is ultimately, you know, what you put out there. And we could have ideas, and I think that we have ideas about what we want to be. You know, I think efficient, you know, I know that disciplined is something that we always want to be. I think we want to be creative. I think we want to be physical. You know, I hope that our style of, you know, our effort and our finish is something that's going to stick out. You know, and those are things that we believe in. You know, we believe in those types of things. I want them to be prepared, you know, but all obviously very efficient in how we handle things and the operation in which we, you know, the speed in which we move at. All my
life. That is Mike Vrabel talking about the identity of the offense. But what do we think the identity will be? TD is here with us for the TD Power Hour, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com. And at 3:15, we'll have your questions for TD. So I should have said get those in now. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. TD, Isaac Bruce, a Hall of Fame wide receiver who, of course, was a big thorn in the Titans side in Super Bowl 34, was on. Oh, he was back in the day. He was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning on ESPN Radio, and he was asked about the Titans offense. Here's what the Reverend Ike Bruce said.
They can be pretty explosive, but I don't know if you want Ryan Tannehill throwing the ball, you know, 30, 40 times a game. Man, I don't think that's what you want him doing. I think the recipe for the last couple of years with the Titans has just been to hand it to the big guy behind him and let him do his things. And that provides so many things from that standpoint, as far as bringing the extra safety down. You make it easier for your perimeter guys. They got more one-on-one opportunities for Tannehill. And that sets him up for the play-action pass down the field. So I think it can be explosive. I don't think Julio's the type of guy to come in there to really publicly demand the football. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all demand the football at some point in time. But to kind of be disruptive, I don't think he's that guy. But you definitely have to feed Julio. I think he's used to eating, and his appetite won't change just because he's in Tennessee now.
So you moved a lot of different angles there. TD, what do you think about the – you brought up the idea that you think if they need to shoot out, they can. If they need to – he's, I guess, a little skeptical about just trying to fire away with Tannehill. What do you make of it?
Well, I think you go back to what Todd Downing said when I asked him specifically about having enough footballs to pass around. He said that each week presents a different challenge and a different opportunity. So – okay, let's say they are going against a team like the Chiefs, a high-scoring team. Let's say you're working the ball control side of it, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. Welcome to Nashville, by the way, Travis Kelce, T-E-U. Let's say they go berserk, right? Now you got to switch things up because you have to score with them. I think this Titans team is capable of doing that, but Isaac Bruce makes an excellent point. I don't think that Tannehill is a guy that needs to throw 35 to 45 times to be an effective passer. We've seen Ryan Tannehill have 25 attempt games, but still get 250, 270 with three touchdowns within that. And that's all because of the way this team plays. So Isaac Bruce is spot on when he says that, frankly.
I think the thing about Tannehill that I do wonder this year is now that they have Julio Jones, I would go into every game saying it's best for the Titans to have Tannehill throw it 27 times, you know, 225, two touchdowns, no picks. That's a perfect Tannehill game because it means you're running the ball. It means you're playing complimentary football, that kind of thing. But to your point, TD, every week's going to present a different challenge. When you get down, can Tannehill, with Julio Jones on his team now, can Tannehill throw you back into a game?
I don't think there should be a doubt, actually, because, you know, you've seen this guy step in. I mean, if you look, I believe only Russell Wilson since 2019 has more fourth quarter comebacks. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where, hey, check the internet. He has stats from that perspective, so it doesn't lie.
I just think about – I think he's had six 300-yard passing games.
You don't need those to win, though. Why do
but
you
I'm
need,
talking about like, if you're going to beat down against Kansas City, like you're probably going to have to throw for 300 yards to win that game.
Probably. But, I mean, again, it's something that, as I said before, like you know, you're going to have a different challenge each week. Will there be weeks where just, you know, they can't get 22 going? Not often, but there may be that one. They're in a really good situation now because they have guys, you know, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones who can take over a game if need be. And you talk about, you know, passing the team to a victory. Look at the last regular season game. I mean, you know, they hooked up for a 50-plus yarder, Tannehill and A.J. Brown, and that set up the field goal.
I look back to the Chiefs game 2 years ago at home that they won, where Tannehill made every throw that he had to make. They were down 14-0. He throws the bomb down the field to Khalif Raymond to get them set up and back into the football game. We all know the comeback drive, Firkser, Humphreys, the first down he picked up on the ground. They end up beating the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs did a bunch of crazy things in that game that cost them the game. They fumbled the ball for a touchdown. They screwed up the execution on two field goals at the end of the game that could have won them that game. Tannehill, though, threw for like 182, and Henry ran for like 187 or something like that. And I just wonder, you know, is the efficiency of Ryan Tannehill why he doesn't need the 300-yard, 350-yard games? And if so, can we bank on that this season to say, hey, they're going to be more efficient, which will be more explosive, but that doesn't mean that they need to throw for 380 yards.
More efficient doesn't necessarily mean more explosive. Honestly, for me, more efficient means, you know, I'm talking about like 20 out of 27. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about 20 out of 25. For me, like if you're going to say more explosive, then typically when you're more explosive, you're taking shots down the field. Those down the field shots have much less of a percentage, you know, a likelihood of being completed. So it's for me, those are two separate things. However, I will say this. You go back to the Saints game. I had that in front of me, 2019. It was 38-28. It was a loss. They didn't have Derrick Henry, but he was 17 out of 27 for 272 yards and three touchdowns. And I think that's the type of performance that could keep them in. Now, they gave up 21 points in the third quarter. You know, and that third quarter was when everything just went messy. Remember, you had the crazy play where Khalif Raymond got, you know, violated and they didn't call a personal foul. You know, that should have been a penalty, but, you know, that's water under the bridge. I just think that game is a good example of what he could do. I think when you look at some of these things that he's been asked to do within this offense, they've done an excellent job of just working to his strengths, right, and playing to his strengths. And I think that's the key. Work in that play action, do that. But he's not his best at his play action. He's on let him move within, you know, move the pocket, boot him, those type of things, and let him make plays that way.
Well, to your point about that Saints game, I remember leaving the stadium that day, and it was a big deal that day because that game wasn't really all that meaningful for the Titans, but the Steelers and the Jets was a humongous game for the Titans' playoff hopes, and the Jets beat the Steelers to put the Titans back in the playoffs. And I remember telling my dad, I'm like, I feel like the Titans won. Like, I know they lost the game against the Saints, but they went toe-to-toe with New Orleans. Right. And to your point about the Raymond hit, I thought that was the game. You know, the
it was a turning point. Yeah.
It was a terrible call in the fourth quarter. Titans are moving down the field. They get a big gain. Raymond gets his head knocked off. Nobody calls it. He fumbles the ball. So because he got concussed midair and fumbles the ball,
right.
New Orleans gets it and wins the game. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, nah, like if Jerome Boger's crew didn't screw it up, Titans are right there with Kansas or with right there with New Orleans, who was a Super Bowl favorite at the time, and the Steelers lost, so the Titans are in the playoffs. And I think there is something to that, that they could do that without Derrick Henry. Speaking of the Saints, TD, coming up next, let's break down the NFC team. So we're going to do this throughout the course of the summer as we get ready for training camp. We'll take a look at the teams, the opponents the Titans have. We'll start with the NFC team. So that's the NFC West and the Saints. Because, remember, there's 17 games now. We'll get TD's thoughts on those Titans opponents, including Week 1 versus Arizona. TD will join us. TD is still with us, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com. And get your questions in for TD now, 615-737-1025, into the text line. We'll hit those at 315. TD's with us for the TD Power Hour at Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving on ESPN 102.5 The Game.